My balance, all right, by the way.
You're balanced, yeah. Welcome back to the Loopcast, everyone. Yeah. Josh is figuring out his video feed. I think it looks fantastic on this beautiful Friday. Welcome back to the show. Today it's just me and Josh, although McCluskey, I think, has been dubbed the funniest guest we've had so far by a few people who have let me know. Although if we want to start out funny on a Friday, we were getting some texts from our co-host Erica. We often mention he's enjoying her maternity leave. I thought I'd bring this up. Erica sent a text to us after hearing us talk about her on the Wednesday show. She said, for every papal document that
we
had to pawn
set it
off
up,
on me.
Like, yeah. Because remember what we talked about?
Josh, I was going to say the text. Come on, man. So the text is, for every papal document you pawn off on me while I'm out, I will extend my maternity leave tour by 1 week. Josh quickly responded with a gif saying, okay, we surrender. This was in reference to us on the Wednesday show saying that Josh and I don't really have much desire to read the upcoming autobiography of Pope Francis, and that's going to be on Erica. So I just said, Erica,
I'll
just
still buy
to it. The church, but
I'll buy the biography of Pope Francis. I mean, in case there's any sleepless nights, just, you know, crack open that cover and away we go.
Well, Josh, you're going to have to if we want Erica to come back on time. So you're being designated the Pope Francis biography reader. I appreciate the suffering in advance. But we have – does Erica know this? Yes, Erica knows this. We talked to her. Shout out to Anne-Marie Sullivan in the chat.
You know, actually, my wife runs a Catholic bookstore, and I can tell you that we still sell books written by Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict even from time to time, but the books by Pope Francis are collecting dust. No one seems to buy them. So.
That's the invisible hand of the market at work. So this is a fun Friday. Friday shows are somewhat new to us. Josh, you might be used to us doing the St. Joseph Consecration series. I'm sorry to disappoint. My mother-in-law said it was her favorite thing we've done so far. We finished. We made the consecration. I've been thinking about ways to keep the show fun. And so we have a brand new segment I haven't even told Josh about, and it's called Are You Smarter Than Josh Mercer? So I'm going to tease that now. Stay ready. We're a competitive bunch here at the Loopcast, and we fully expect there to be a mean competition.
We are competitive. We are. You know what? What we do is on the staff here at Catholic Vote, you know, we don't want to get too much into sports, but we do it just because we like to be competitive. So we, all the members of the staff that want to, we fill out brackets for the March Madness stuff. I love watching college basketball. Shout out to Oakland here in Michigan, coming up with a big win over Kentucky. It. Sorry if we have any Looper fans in Kentucky, but nothing against Kentucky, but
Josh, do you know about my connection to Oakland?
Well, before you get to that, I'm just happy because I have a bracket with my family too, and my brother had Kentucky winning it all, and so obviously that made me very happy.
It was funny. There was a some aide at the White House was like, Kamala Harris knows ball because she chose the Oakland upset, and there's a 0% chance she didn't think that was
Oakland, in Oakland, California, right?
0% chance. She saw Oakland and inked it in. Unlike Kamala, my one-year-old does know ball. He also chose Oakland, but that's because I actually grew up about 20 minutes away from Oakland. Oakland is in Rochester, Michigan. It's a kind of a commuter school. Like, it's a really big school, but most people don't live on campus. Oakland Golden Grizzlies. And I was completely mesmerized by that one guy, Golkey. He's like the next coming of Jimmer Fredette. I mean, he couldn't miss.
That was amazing. It's just fun. It's fun to watch these, you know, 20-year-old kids. You know, they're not kids, obviously, but 20-year-old guys playing their hearts out. I find it so much more exciting to watch that than to watch. I don't really ever watch the NBA, but, you know, it's fun. Completely. I love college basketball. It's got a good spirit to it.
I was just talking about this with another coworker. I think pound for pound, the best sports tournament in America, maybe rivaled in the world, rivaled by the World Cup for international.
What is
not,
that?
Not
even
for Josh people.
That is
not for Mercer people. But
World Cup. What is that?
It's not a cup that you drink. It's a cup that you win. It's called soccer.
I don't like the World Cup because it involves other countries. Like, I was disappointed when Toronto Blue Jays won the World Series. I mean, come on.
Such
and then
a nationalist.
It did it 2 years in a row. It's just right here at home.
But fun fact, that guy Jack Golke, you had like 10 threes. He went to Hillsdale. He started his basketball career at Hillsdale College, transferred to Oakland University. So connections abound. Super fun last night. I love March Madness. Shout out to anyone if your bracket's still intact. So before we get into the fun, we got to talk a little shop here. So we have what is being coined the mini boost. Is it the mini bus? The mini, but
mini
the
bus.
Omnibus. Okay, mini bus. Sorry, my Latin kicked in there for a second. Basically,
your Latin kicked in. I kicked your butt in Latin last time. Come on, man.
Josh, do you want me to do the show, or are you just going to dunk on me this entire time?
I'm going to dunk on you the whole show.
Okay, got it. I'll just be prepared. So the minibus, it's the latest attempt to avoid a government shutdown. It will be approximately $1.2 trillion, and it was released on Thursday and is about to get a vote today, I believe at noon from the House. Is this correct, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, unfortunately, it looks like this thing is on a glide path towards getting passed by both the House and the Senate, because this is what I try to tell people, like, the Republicans control the House, right? They control it. I mean, I guess they do, but they have a razor-thin majority of, like, three seats, and it's going to be two seats as soon as Ken Buck actually formally, I think he quits next week. I can't remember the exact timing on that. So all you need is like a few, you know, if you have all the Democrats in favor of a bill like this, all you need is like a handful of small rhinos, like three or four Republican, you know, liberal Republicans in the House, and you can pretty much pass just about whatever you want to, because you know they'll get 60 votes in the Senate. So it's unfortunate. I hate this kind of stuff. They come up with these bills and they basically release it, you know, 36 hours or 48 hours before you got to vote on it, before it shuts down. The last thing that they want is sunlight. They don't want people to know what's on in this bill. And so, you know, our good friend Tom was on the last show. He was investigating the bill, and he gave us kind of a breakdown of what's in there. And it's horrible. You know, millions of there's numerous earmarks in the bill that are going to give tens of millions of dollars to groups that support child mutilization. And the big thing on PEPFAR, now PEPFAR was something that George W. Bush was very successful, and one of his crowning achievements that he never really gets enough credit for. Even Bono of U2, who's a liberal, obviously, he really does give a lot of credit to George W. Bush for what he did on PEPFAR, helping fight the spread of HIV and AIDS in Africa. And PEPFAR was a good program, and it was working great. And Catholic Vote supports the original mission of PEPFAR, to try to help stop the spread of HIV and AIDS in Africa and other countries that are having that problem. But the Biden administration opened that funding up, and they hijacked PEPFAR to promote abortion and have contracts with organizations like International Planned Parenthood Federation. So this bill, unfortunately, would set that would keep that in motion. Would allow the Biden administration to sign contracts with international groups that support abortion, and those contracts would go and extend beyond the end of Biden's first term. Hopefully, it'll be his only term. And the whole point is, like, why would we want to do this? Like, it's one thing if you extend it just to January 20th or something like that.
Right, and if I could ask, because before we get into more bad, because there's a lot of it, the one thing that stuck out to me was there was this promise from Mike Johnson, if he became speaker, to allow people to have 72 hours to read through the entire bill. It's looking like that's going to be waived. That seems very frustrating to me. I mean, we're talking about thousands of pages of text and supporting documents that you'd have to read through. Why do you think he caved on the 72 hours? I thought that was kind
of that kind of stuff frustrates me. I mean, I don't know exactly why, but if I were him, I would put forward a bill that would fund the government for 48 hours and then say, that'll give us enough time to actually examine and look at this bill. The fact is, a lot of the members are anxious to get home, and they do this intentionally. They do this on purpose. This bill is set up so that everyone's going to just, it's called, you know, when members of Congress smell the jet fumes, right? And they're anxious to get out the door and run to the airport, fly home, and be with their family. And here's the thing that, like, no one has sympathy for politicians. Okay, I get it. All right? But if you're a member, if you're a family member, a member of Congress, you absolutely hate it. Like, you know, it's like, come on, you're going to ruin Easter? And so, like, these congressmen and senators are just going to be like, whatever. I even if they hate it, they're like, I'm just going to vote yes. I want to go home. And that's bad politics. We need to make sure that these votes aren't under the gun and aren't under pressure. So, like, this bill, like, what about this bill couldn't have been done a week ago? And give people 3-4 days to debate it, make some amendments, tweak it or whatever, and then take your time to vote on it, debate it, and then vote on it and go home. You know, after you've made some good changes to it. But if I don't want to do that.
If I could ask as well, who's in charge of putting this bill out? So like you said, it could have been done like a week ago or a week and a half. Who releases the bill and why? So like, why is it released so late? Who could be in charge of making that not happen?
Well, again, if the Speaker of the House wanted to exert a little bit more influence and say, you know, whoever's putting out this bill, you know, the committee staffers and all this other kind of stuff, we want to make sure that we give ourselves enough time. So if it doesn't make it to the floor, if we don't get a copy of it by, let's say, last week, Friday, then we're not going to, you know, vote on it. Like, you got to come up with something. But the problem is, I love it when people are attacking Speaker Mike Johnson. I actually think, for the most part, is a really good man. But the fact is, you've got a 3-seat majority or whatever. He's got no room, no wiggle room. You can't imagine how hard it is. You have 435 members in the House, and his majority is so, so tiny. He can't afford to lose any Republicans, or otherwise it basically becomes a Democratic Party budget. And that's basically what we're going to probably end up here with. If we had like a normal like majority that a party has, like a 20-seat, 30-seat majority, then you could be a little bit more, you know, gutsy. And then you could say something like, right, well, if we all hold together and we could say, we're not going to pass any budget until you fix the border, until you clean up this garbage you're doing on PEPFAR, and no money for, you know, any of this stuff, like these radical groups that support child mutilation. But without that, you know, people are like, why doesn't he do more? It's like, it's so easy for everyone to call his bluff. You go, like, the Speaker could say, I'm not supporting this. I'm not going to put this forward. And you'd get, unfortunately, still a majority of members of Congress that would just go ahead and pass this bill. That's kind of what I'm worried about. I mean, it's tough. It is so tough to try to govern the House of Representatives when you have like a 3-seat majority.
Kind of goes back to consequences of a really bad 2022 election cycle in which we thought we would win all these House seats and nothing happened. And there's consequences to this. This is one of them. One thing that I saw that was interesting, and I wonder if it would kind of contribute to this and some interesting politics being played. Part of the bill that got cut was, or a restriction actually, on funding to what's called the UN Relief and Works Agency. This is a Palestinian refugee agency. It's the primary conduit for humanitarian aid to Gaza. I've seen a lot of progressives very upset that this is not a part of it. And maybe what will happen is they'll just cave and take the restrictions off to get the bill through. But it seems like there's actually some people on the far progressive side that are saying, well, we hate this too. You know, we're not going to put it through. Republicans like Chip Roy, of course, are going to be like, well, we're bankrupt and it funds abortion. And I think I'm seeing some other bad parts of like $880 million to secure the borders of Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, Tunisia, and Oman. $100 million for diversity training inside the Health Resources and Services Administration. And an additional $119 million to combat the transnational threat to wildlife poaching and trafficking. So everyone's kind of getting their pork projects fed.
Hey, I have an idea, Tom.
Yeah.
We could change the name of some of our cities, like El Paso. We could just call it El Kiev, and then maybe Congress would fund a border to protect it. We just convince them all that it's actually technically part of Ukraine.
Well, it depends on how they identify, right? I mean, if the city wants to identify right, like that, then they can right, make that change. One thing that also really stuck out, too, is there's a connection back to St. Patrick's Cathedral. And we talked about this on the Loopcast, where these trans activists basically tricked St. Patrick's Cathedral to doing a funeral, and then the funeral got super rowdy and blasphemous and was horrible. But so a portion of this spending bill, and it all comes back to this, of course, $146,000 would be going to the Apicia Community Health Center in New York. So the health center provides letters for sex change surgeries, and the program to do so was developed by an activist whose funeral desecrated a New York cathedral where attendees celebrated whoredom and offered prayers for sex changes. This was requested by New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. I don't understand how. So, like, Josh, you understand this. This has nothing to do with funding essential functions of the government, right? So, like, they're basically using that as a gun to threaten, hey, if you don't fund my little pet project, the government's not going to get funded. And then they just do it.
Here's what happens, though. The Democratic Party, they use the federal government as a piggy bank to reward their friends and to punish their enemies. So that's why they're giving, you know, $146,000 of their money to this radical left-wing organization. Like, and this is what I'm saying. Like, what happens, the left does this all the time, and then when conservatives get to power, they try to, as hard as they can, to try to shrink government, and it never actually ends up working. So what you really need to think about is, when you get back, if let's say Republicans win this November and they take control of the purse next year, maybe try not, I mean, I just think it's kind of foolish to think that, oh, suddenly we'll have a much smaller government. That's not going to happen. But maybe what we could start with is stop giving money to our enemies. Stop giving money to organizations like this that are calling for the mutilation of kids. Stop giving money to abortion centers. Stop giving money to, or, you know, to groups that promote, you know, racist DEI stuff. You know, if you could just do that stuff, like stop, you know, what is, we say when it comes to doctors, the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. That's your first step. Do no harm. So this is what we could start with. Stop funding this garbage. Now, secondly, after you stop funding this garbage, yeah, actually, you know what? We're not going to suddenly turn into a, you know, a limited government paradise. It's not going to be suddenly a libertarian government, okay? So maybe what we could do is fund organizations that are trying to spread freedom and liberty here in the United States, like promote school choice instead of promoting child mutilation.
Not to bring this up to bash you because you are a former libertarian. You had an embarrassing libertarian phrase. I've been seeing weird arguments online in favor of illegal immigrants being able to own guns.
Oh, man. Yeah, did you see this? It was the Libertarian Party of Louisiana. You know, I don't know if it's like some college kid who's in charge of their social media account, but they put forward this a picture of like an, I think it was an AR-15 gun.
Yeah, we got it here.
And arm the migrants. And basically they're just trying to be, they're so pro-gun that they want everyone to have guns. And if you hate migrants, because libertarians love immigration, even if it's kind of, they don't think it should be illegal. They believe in open borders. And you're like, wait, what? I thought you guys liked limited government. And they just want, they absolutely idolize the market, like the market above everything. And so, like, to me, it's hilarious. Like, you want hundreds of thousands of people who are pouring into this country who have no connection to the land. They don't know where they're at. There's no sense of neighbors. They don't have any roots here, and you're just going to throw them a bunch of guns. Like, this is the dumbest argument I've ever seen. Intentionally provocative, very stupid. I think it looks very bad. I know 99% of libertarians, well, maybe 85% of libertarians, would not agree with such a stupid argument as this.
So can I set up the argument that I've seen for you to then address? The argument that I've seen is that under the U.S. Constitution, we believe the Second Amendment right, the right to bear arms, the right to defend oneself, is a right given to you from God. That's enshrined in the Constitution. Therefore, just because you're in America and you're not legal, you still should have the God-given right to defend yourself and bear arms. That is the
argument. Wait, now hold on a second, Tom. The Second Amendment, of course, in the entire Constitution, is written for citizens of the United States. And as a citizen of the United States, I have the God-given right to protect myself and my family and acquire guns. But that right actually is, of course, not pure absolute. If I actually commit a crime with a gun, then I can lose that privilege. And then they could say, no, you know, you have to go to jail. If someone breaks the law, they don't have a God-given right to something endangering other people. And these people are crossing the border illegally. They're breaking the law. Then they're also not U.S. citizens. So they what right would they have to claim that they should be able to own guns? You know, like if you come into our country illegally and you have a gun, you should go, well, not just maybe either to jail or you get deported immediately. I mean, that's, of course, anyone, gun or not.
Well, Josh, I have a video for you. So this came in from El Paso yesterday. Pat, if you want to throw that up.
Yeah, El Paso, also known as maybe the new Kiev, right? We'll call it new Kiev.
Yeah, we can call it the new. It depends how it identifies, I guess. But Ben, go ahead and play this video. I think the audio is like riot noises. So that... So right now we're seeing at the El Paso border, migrants are just completely a tour of fence
down. Overrunning the border, yeah.
You have some National Guardsmen standing in front of them and just completely get trampled. I mean, we get a riot right up to the next fence here. And I have to say, the gun thing came to mind because these national, well, first off, if we set this up, Texas is now, so the Biden administration sued to stop Texas from being able to exert its own authority to keep its border, essentially. They're saying that it's usurping federal government power. The Biden administration sued to block it. A Supreme Court ruling just flipped it. So now Texas reinstitutes, I guess, its own right to defend its border. So it's using Texas National Guardsmen in El Paso. So these guys in El Paso, they have rifles in their hands and just get completely overrun. I'm just thinking about all of the safety implications of that. These guys have AR-15s in their hands, it looks like, some type of weapon. And
but the migrants know they won't be used. That's the problem.
That's well, right. But then we're putting these guardsmen, their lives in complete danger, right? How hard would it be for someone to snatch that and then start shooting?
So yeah. So, I mean, they need to, again, it's, you know, when you're talking about guardsmen, law enforcement, military, whatever, you have your rules of engagement. And so the migrants know the rules of engagement are they should hold guns to make them look tough, but they'll never actually fire. And because of that, this is the situation you have at the border. You're inviting a mob to just run you over. So you have to ask yourselves, what do we have the stomach for? And I would say, well, at least what you should do is provide them with something like, you know, you don't have to actually shoot bullets, let's say, but if you shot something else that weren't bullets, but that would actually cause, you know, some sort of injury, but not like, you know, drop people dead, then at least you would have some way of causing, you know, some harm. I mean, and, you know, then other people in the crowd are like, well, you know what, maybe we won't attack.
Well, I've been told reliably that walls don't work. So we're not using, it's like we're not even allowing our own country to use the tools necessary to actually keep a border. Right. Amidst pressure from our federal government, basically, to let them in. So this feels very.
But the thing
like
is, if you had a mob standing like that, you know, coming down your street and about to enter your house, and you had a gun, like imagine not using your gun, like it'd be insane. Like, of course you'd use it because you're like, I probably can't stop all of you, but if I start shooting, then maybe you'll get the idea, go somewhere else, leave this house alone. And, you know, no one wants to use lethal force. It's not like, oh, yay, I can't wait. It's like, no, of course not. But the fact that you're showing that you will never use it, then the migrants are just like, well, they're not going to use this. Let's just, you know, blow past this border.
Yeah, I mean, this video might become the centerpiece of every Trump ad for the next up until the election, right?
Yeah. Now, of course, it was if the roles were reversed, you know, if you imagine if you had a media that was sympathetic to this and said this is a, you know, like NBC was like, this is horrible, then they would invite, like, you know, one pundit said, then on the Today Show they would invite one of the guardsmen that came in that got run over and showing, like, you know, his daughter made him a little note that says, you know, wear this to protect daddy. And there'd be all this sympathy and stuff like that. People just don't appreciate how maliciously evil our national corporate media is, because this is an absolute, it's absolutely insane that we have this scene where a mob can just run over a fence and there's guardsmen there, and those guardsmen know, like, we actually can't do anything to stop these people, and they're way outnumbered. Even though you have guns, you're not be able to use it. I feel
it's a completely impossible.
My heart
situation.
Goes out for them. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't make a regular habit of this, but Morning Joe touched on this. Joe Scarbo over at MSNBC.
He's the worst.
He held up a newspaper of a picture of this and said, "This is all Trump's fault because Trump told people to shoot down the border bill." So not only is it shameful that this is all enabled, it's actually Trump's fault that this is happening somehow.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, if it is, then if that's the case, Joe, keep running this clip every day.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Just show everyone.
It's like, keep going.
They'll
with
get
that
the
narrative.
Memo.
Exactly. Right. It's like, well, who's in charge right now? It isn't Trump, unfortunately. So, Josh, it's Fun Friday. We got some new juice on the Friday show. I have a new game. It's called Are You Smarter Than Josh Mercer? Would you like to play?
I don't know if I have a choice.
Okay, so I'm actually going to paste this link. First off, what's up to everyone in the live chat? Thank you for joining us on a Friday. We caught you before March Madness, fortunately. So I put
I can't even read anyone in the chats because my eyes, I had my annual eye exam this morning. So I'm kind of half blind here, folks.
So this gives an actual advantage probably to people taking the chat because maybe Josh can't even read the questions. But Josh, I just put this Google form in the form of a quiz here in
I open
the
that up, then?
Game. Open that bad boy up. I see we got the screen share on. This is also going to be in the description episode if you guys would like to play and you're listening on the podcast format. So this will be in there as well. This is going to be a normal Friday installment. So if you don't know, Josh really likes trivia. He's very proud of his trivia prowess. And we thought, what better way to really test Josh's abilities than to pit him against the entirety of the Loopcast audience? So how I'm going to do this is Josh is going to answer the questions. There's five questions. I'll read them out for the podcast audience. The listeners or the live stream people now have an opportunity to play as well in the Google form. I'm going to take the answer that the majority of the live stream audience takes. If the majority gets the right answer for the question, then they will get a point. And then if Josh gets it right, he will get a point. So we are now, whoever has the most points at the end of it will win this week's edition of Are You Smarter Than Josh Mercer? Yes, I'm going to be keeping score. I have faith. I think we have a very intelligent, handsome, beautiful, popular, successful listenership. So I have no doubt that Josh is going to get creamed, but we'll see. So I'm going to start out with the first question here. What does the word Hosanna mean? Don't say it. You got to submit.
Okay. All right.
Because we got people in the chat playing as well. Next question. What animal is hailed at length during the exultet of Easter Vigil? We have four options: camel, lamb, bees, and dogs. Next question: what is the first Sunday after the first full moon after the first day of spring? Yeah, no cheating, by the way. We have someone potentially cheating in the audience. That would be nasty. No cheating. We're in an honesty system. Next question. On March 22nd of what year did the British Parliament pass the Stamp Act? We have the options 1765, 1762, 1770, 1772. What part of a tarantula is dangerous to eat? Options: the hair, the pincers, the abdomen, and the whole thing. Okay, so...
These are good questions.
You know, thank you, Josh.
I'll probably get one right.
I hope it's up to your standards. You think you're going to get one right?
No, I don't know. I'm not going to do as good as I think, though. I know.
That'd be embarrassing, honestly. We might have to cancel this segment before it even begins.
No, we don't do cancel culture here.
Okay. See, we're getting some responses rolling in. I'm going to give the chat a little bit more time, and then we can go over some answers. I'll have to lock it out. All right. So to cover the next minute or two, Josh, who did you choose to win March Madness this year?
I'm going with Houston.
Houston. Okay. Do you think Purdue is going to lose their first round game again?
No, I don't think they'll lose the first game, but I think I picked Houston, good team anyway. I watched them before the tournament. They just were unstoppable, and I think it's almost like going to be poetic that Jim Nance, first year he's not doing the NCAA, that his alma mater are going to take the title. That's my call.
Okay. All right, so I think we have enough responses at this point. We got Anne-Marie Sullivan's rooting for UConn, all caps. Very nice. Okay, so we got our responses. She's rooting for UConn. She has UConn going all the way. That's a reasonable pick. That's
a good team.
So UConn, Josh.
Actually, I was in college, and I bet on UConn in 1999, and I was $1 in, and there was 54 people in the pool, and I took it all.
Okay. So
thank you, UConn.
That's a fun fact. Okay, so we have our responses in. Josh, answer the first question.
I should.
What does Hosanna mean?
I put praise, but it was not. It's alas, I got that wrong.
That's tough. It is save us. What animal is hailed at length during the exultant of Easter Vigil?
So I said lamb, but apparently it's
correct. It's the bees
bees aren't an animal. What do you mean?
All right, if we're gonna get technical, the Loopcast audience got that one correct. We had 57% of the vote go bees, so get wrecked, Josh. The Loopcast audience got the first one wrong. So Loopcast 1, Josh 0 right now. What is the first Sunday after the first full moon of the first day of spring? Josh, what did you say?
Of course, that's Easter.
That is Easter. Luke Cass got that one as well. Good job, guys.
You know, that's why we had to change the calendar. Now, I felt bad about this next question. I did put down 1765, then I changed my answer at the last second to 62. So.
Oh, Josh. Oh, no.
You're
okay, though.
Because second-guessing myself.
The LoopCast audience said 1762. The correct answer is 1765. Shame on everyone. So LoopCast right now, we have LoopCast 2. We have Josh 1. And on the final question, we could get a tie. What part of the tarantula is dangerous to eat?
The hair. I knew.
The hair. Okay. And the LoopCast audience, unfortunately, a majority said the abdomen at 37.5. So we have a tie.
Oh, bonus round.
Gosh, I should have thought ahead.
Come on. Bonus. I'll get my trivia questions here. Let's go.
Josh just left. All right.
Catholic trivia.
Let's just say you have
going to. Going on the honor system. I'm an honest man.
No, Josh, you're going to have to close your eyes. Close your eyes. I'll ask a question, and then I'm gonna just have the chat answer directly in the YouTube chat.
Okay. Well, don't look at the screen.
Yes.
All right. What's the question?
Okay. I'm finding one right now. Mm-mm. Okay. Which continent is in all four hemispheres?
Oh, I know that one.
I'm going to give the chat 15 seconds.
Might need another question on that.
Okay, 50. We got a few Africas. I didn't think this one well through because people obviously are probably just going to see one person answer and then the next one not answer. I'm going to put my producers on a way to tie break this as we continue on in the show. So that one goes out to Big Red & Co. Think of a way to tie break this by the end of this show. That was probably a bad idea what I came up with, but I did it on the spot. Congrats to people who said Africa. Josh, did you say Africa?
Yeah, of course.
All right. That was a rookie question, really. I just looked up a random one. But Fun Friday moves on. We now have another new section. So people said that we're a pretty expressive bunch. And
who, me?
Yeah, you. Definitely you.
I'm a wallflower. What are you talking about?
So us two wallflowers give good facial expressions and reactions to things. So I had our producers look out for a video for us to watch together, add some commentary on. So now's the time. I haven't seen this. Josh hasn't seen this. And I see pretty much everything that goes to the show. So hopefully this is a good one. So if we could get that video played and we'll get that rolling. Ben, that's, I believe that's Ben. For anyone wondering, I have Arizona winning it all. And my strategy on that is for office brackets, if you pick the like the popular pick, you have to be more successful in down ballot stuff. So it's harder to win. So you could even pick UConn, but if five other people pick UConn, then like what are we doing, you know?
Yeah, I was surprised not many people pick Houston. I think I was like one of the only ones. So
that's a steal. Because I was like, I thought people would pick Houston. Obviously, people usually pick the one seed. So I usually go for like a two.
I went double reverse psychology in that one. I played the odds, man. I think I'm in first place right now or tied.
It's possible. My one-year-old, like I said, picked Oakland, but I did not. So I'm not doing as well as my one-year-old.
Wow, that's not that big of a deal.
All right. So I think we have Rez. You have the video here. It looks pretty black and white to me. Rez.
I got no audio on it.
No audio, Rez. Technical difficulties?
I know. We need that Simpsons cartoon.
Which one?
The way technical difficulties, it's like, you know, you never watched The Simpsons at all? Like, then the cord was like pulled out by like an animal or something. You know, it's kind of funny.
I've never watched The Simpsons before.
Really? You're a better person than I am.
No, I don't really do the Simpsons. I always thought adult cartoons were kind of strange. Although sometimes I appreciate South Park. Because
gosh, I can't stand the noises on that show.
They're really annoying, but they're willing to go after.
I was an old man when I was 15 when it first came out. I'm like, this is horrible. It makes my ears bleed.
Yeah, but you watch The Simpsons?
But it's not painful, the noises. Like the South Park, me, 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 me. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, shut up. I can't stand this.
There's some good like meme stuff from The Simpsons for sure. You see the At Least You Tried cake? That one's a classic.
Yeah, that's pull that one out. Good. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, Rez, let's see if you can pull that up, or Ben, if you can pull that up. Not sure exactly what the status of the producers are, but we're going to keep going. We have Twilight Zone now. Josh, what is your Twilight Zone for the week?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things on social media, people like to talk about the word copium. In other words, you know, it's like combining the words cope with opium. It's okay. Like this addictive thing where you're like, you just hope everything in your hearts and dreams, you hope that it's true and it's not. And it's like, you're trying to deal with bad news, but as a coping mechanism, you come up with, oh, well, maybe it's not so bad. And maybe it's this and that. And so there's this liberal election Twitter. Okay. So all the liberals on Twitter, they post about the election stuff. And, you know, they're trying to say that all the polling now that shows Trump leading everywhere, they're like, oh, it's not so bad. So this guy, Elliot Morris, said, now, hold on a second. He goes, not sure I've seen anyone make this comparison yet. But at this point in the 2008 election, McCain was actually leading Obama by a point and a half in the general election polls. So this is like what hilarious about this is like his point he's trying to make is that, hey, you know, it's only March and everything can change. And he's not wrong on that aspect, but it really just feels like, hey, it's not so bad. It's not so bad. Well, first of all, that was Obama against McCain, but most people thought it was still going to be Hillary at this point. And Hillary was leading McCain in the polls by about 6 points, four to 6 points. So the lead for the Democrat, the presumptive Democrat, was actually higher. And it was kind of close. Then Obama gets it, and it was kind of close, but he had a pretty strong lead for most of the year. And then McCain starts, you know, picks Sarah Palin. He starts catching fire. People are like, well, maybe, you know, maybe this is going to be different. McCain and Palin will be different than Bush. And then the stock market collapses and it's over. Mm-hmm. So his whole point, though, and putting out this poll is saying, hey, just because Joe Biden is behind in every national poll, just because Joe Biden's behind in Michigan, Pennsylvania, you know, Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, all these swing states, it's not so bad. That's why I call it copium, right?
Wait, Biden but here, and Obama are like the same person. They're like identical.
Who's identical?
Biden and Obama.
Yeah, right. Obviously not. Okay, so this is what I'm going to do, a little trivia for you.
Oh, here we go.
Okay, so here's what I want you to think about now. What are the longest Republican leading, the longest amount of time, the longest streak of when a Republican presidential candidate was leading in the polls, okay, in the Real Clear Politics national average polling, okay? So that's not taking any one poll, you know, you're getting the average of the polls together. That's okay. What they call it, the Real Clear Politics average. Okay, so we're going to compare the polling data over the last six election cycles, okay?
Okay.
And I want you to say I want you to think now back to 2004, okay? You got Bush running for re-election against John Kerry, the challenger. How many days was George W. Bush leading in the polls? Now it was a close election. He won the 2000 election, you know, by the skin of his teeth, right? He won Florida, you know, the hanging chads and all that kind of stuff. So he's running for your re-election. How many days do you think he led in the polls in the average? So I'll give you this one.
Okay.
He led in the polls for about 69 days. George W. Bush did. That meant obviously Kerry was leading a lot of days as well, right?
It's an interesting way to do trivia, ask the question and then answer it for me. But I appreciate it. 69 days. Got it right.
All right. Now let's go to the year 2008. How many days did John McCain, the Republican presidential candidate, how many days did he lead in the polls?
No way.
So if Bush had led for a total of 69 days, of 69 days, how long was McCain's longest streak? How long was he leading in the polls?
Like 35?
Try 12 days.
Ah.
All right, now, Mitt Romney, 2012, right? How many days did he lead in the polls nationally? If McCain did it for 12 days, how many do you think Romney had?
Oh, zero.
That's not true. He actually had 10 days. Fewer than McCain. It was a short, tiny window. It was in October after that first debate where he really did knock it out of the park. And then in the second debate, Candy Crowley had to make sure, well, we weren't going to let that happen again. All right. In 2016, with Donald Trump running for president, how many days was his longest streak of being a leader in the polls?
Three.
Oh, so good. I'm going to give it to you. That was so good. 4 days. That's all he had. From May 22 to 25, and then again from July 25 to 28, right after the Republican convention, I believe it was, he led the polls for 4 days. Now, that was his first try at the office. Trump led by 4 days. That was the longest streak he had of leading the polls, 4 days. That was back in 2016. In the 2020 presidential cycle, how many days did Trump lead in the polls? What was the longest streak of days he was leading in the polls against Biden?
I think probably bigger, right? So maybe like 20?
Zero.
Zero. So that
Donald Trump never led the polls over Biden. Not at all. Not. Zip, zitch, zero. Zero. So just to recap, in 2016, the longest Trump had a polling lead average was 4 days. He did it twice. In 2020, Donald Trump never led in the polls, not a single day, wall to wall. You know, it's usually about 15 months. Never. Now I ask you this. How many days has Trump been leading the polls over Biden this presidential cycle, this campaign? If he led 4 days, that was the longest streak he had back in 2016. And in 2020, he didn't lead him a single day. How's he doing this time around? How long has his longest streak been of leading in the polls?
Is it in the 50s? 55?
It's been 151 days.
My gosh.
That Trump has been, since the last time Biden was even tied with Trump. Well, 151 days. And it's
did
been,
you see that RCP poll out of Michigan?
And the last time Biden had a lead, because that was just a tie 151 days ago. The last time that Biden was actually leading in the polls, 189 days.
Wow.
Now, Trump tends to do better on election day than he does in the polls. This is why I'm cautiously optimistic. Things can change. Yes, it's March and November is, 7.5-8 months away. So anything could change, of course. However, this is by far the largest lead a Republican presidential candidate has had over the Democratic candidate in the 21st century.
Did you see the Real Clear Politics poll out of Michigan?
Of course. Yeah, we mentioned that. We sent out a message to our email list yesterday talking about things that are going on in Michigan. Catholic Vote and the League of American Workers got together and worked on a poll of Michigan voters, and it showed, there hasn't been, the last 9 polls out of Michigan, Trump has been leading except for one that was like a tie. And Biden hasn't led a single poll in Michigan all year.
Did you see the minority swing? I think it went from like 18% Trump to, or no, 11% Trump to 18% Trump. So he picked up 7. And then Biden went from like 80% to like 20. It's like a 60% swing on.
Well, I don't know about the him on the swing there, but what's going on right now amongst, in fact, because, Trump has like doubled his support or maybe gone about 50 or 60% more blacks. So he's going from like 8% or 7% to like 12%. And then amongst Hispanics, Trump is actually leading amongst Hispanics. And so it's leading some of these liberal pollsters, like I mentioned before, Elliot Morris, to say, these polls don't make sense. They're not true. We can't be, he's not winning this many blacks now, and he's not winning this many Latinos. There's something wrong. These polls can't be true. And they sound a lot, by the way, I've heard this kind of stuff because I knew a lot of my conservative friends in 2012 were like, no, these polls can't be right. There's no way Obama, he's been so terrible. There's no way he could get reelected. The economy's not so great, and Obama's a terrible president. These polls are all off. We got to unskew these polls. We got to fix them. And it's like, dude, what are you doing? I know sometimes media outlets like to lie and stuff like that, but after a while, like, these are pollsters that are, even conservative pollsters, and they're like, this is what's going on. Like, are you going to accept reality or not? Now, are all polls right? No, of course. Sometimes they get it wrong. Was there a hidden voter? Did Trump have the hidden voter? People who would refuse to tell pollsters who they really supported? Yeah, that's true, somewhat. That's less of a concern than it was, almost 8 years ago. So I think, I just feel like what's going on right now, it's the liberals on Twitter who are just denying all the polls. That can't be true. Can't be true.
Taking the copium. So I think we got from Rez, we got the video now with audio. So we can split the Twilight Zones here. I'm going to throw it on stage here. All right, Rez, ready to rock.
Worried about how to ask for a date? Have you ever worried about how to ask for a date or how to act when you're on a date? Well, date etiquette will help answer your question. Help you through those awkward moments. Help you have more fun.
I wanted to catch you before you left school.
What for?
Well, would you like to go to the class play a week from Saturday night?
I know it's a little late.
That's the way. A date proposal should be specific, not one of those you busy Saturday things.
Is this footage of Josh asking his wife for a date?
A girl likes it. A girl likes a fair chance to decide whether she wants the date or not.
Get you in Spanish class and
well. Well, that's all right, Danny. I'm not doing anything Saturday night. I'd like to go.
It's up to Danny to give Alice all the details of the date, but if he leaves anything out, she can always ask.
Hard. It ought to be good. I think we'll enjoy it. Let's see. I'll pick you up a week from Saturday at about 7:30. How's that?
Fine. Are we double dating?
That I don't know, but I can let you know if we are.
We can talk about it during the week.
Sure, and then I can get your address from you, too.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. And don't forget.
Okay. This is just titled How to Be a Man.
Have you ever worried about...
That's awesome.
I love it.
Archive footage of Josh asking his wife on a date.
I don't know if I ever had that good hair, but...
That hair was awesome, yeah. Okay, bye. But how is he going to contact her without cell phone?
Well, presumably they're going to see each other in class again. But this is the thing that just kind of... My wife and I would... we laugh at it because we had a lot of friends, you know, we first met, we lived in Ann Arbor. We just had a lot of friends who, you know, they're trying to discern what was going on with their life. You know, am I supposed to enter into religious life, or am I supposed to start a family? I just don't know what God wants to do with me. And then, so the problem with it is that they didn't take any steps. They were standing in neutral. And it's like, well, okay, if you want God to guide your path, start walking and he can start moving you one way or the other. But if you don't move, he can't really steer you. So I always tell people, like, hey, what's the worst that can happen? You know, like she says no, okay, then you got your answer. And if you can move on to the next person or whatever. I never understood the paralyzing fear. Like if I just gotta tell my boys this too. Like, you know what? Chances are that it's not going to be the very first person who's going to say yes that you're going to marry. So just
Josh,
get over yourself.
You're telling me you didn't get watching that video. It even brought me back to like the nervous feelings of like, oh, there's a pretty girl that you like want to talk to, and just having to get up the courage to like even go start the conversation. Like, oh, that was like a visceral feeling that I had, and there's just something so beautiful and wholesome about that. And I really hope that this is still happening. Like that kind of thing is still happening, obviously in a different way. Although,
you know what it did though for me? Here's a little Mercer tip. I started just, when I was single, obviously, I would just start flirting with women that were way out of my league. And then they'd be like, oh, you're so funny. Like, wait a minute, what's going on? Like, you know, are you trying to flirt with me? I'm like, of course not. I mean, you know, basically acknowledging I'm way out of your league. And be like, you know. And then eventually somebody gets around to like going, well, I like this guy. And so I married her. She's still way out of my league. She's gorgeous. You know,
they say practice makes perfect.
That's right.
I just love how wholesome that video felt. Like it, movies like that remind me of like Leave It to Beaver, like kind of that era. And, there's just a real innocence in that interaction that I feel like is like lost or was even attacked almost. Like, I don't know if it's just like feminism has just kind of like gotten in my brain or something, but like that just seemed like a beautiful, wholesome interaction. And
yeah,
I don't know if we've gotten taken away from that by different forces, but
I mean, the '50s weren't perfect, but like this idea that Hollywood likes to say it was like the dark ages or whatever. And so Greece and everything else that they want to shove down our throats is like, let us reject, you know, the Christian norms that we had as a society. And, you know, it just drives me.
Well, it's crazy how far, I guess, the ball has been pushed down the road, because like that video was made about how to ask a woman on a date. And like that was probably a normal interaction at the time. And now we've like normalized like, oh, you're going to text someone for like a booty call, basically at like late at night, someone you don't even know to have casual sex with.
Swipe left, swipe right, you know, whatever that is.
That is presented as normal, I think, to like kids, like teenagers now, or instead of like, this was basically as far as it went. Like this was a normal interaction. There was nothing beyond like, okay, you know, we're going to meet up for a date. Maybe we'll double date. We're going to go out to eat somewhere. I think like that as the norm, I miss. Like, I just wish that we spoke in terms of like, this is actually probably
why
advice
she want
I would
double
give
date?
To a son.
Why was she gently suggesting we do a double date? Like, there's safety in numbers, you know. Like all these kind of cultural things, like they were there for a reason. Like, and you know, Hollywood tells us to abandon all cultural mores, all, you know, normal things. Like, you know, and they do it under the guise of freedom. Like, don't let your friends, don't let your mom and dad and all these old fuddy-duddies tell you how you should live your life. You should be able to live your life the way we want you to live it by rejecting everything and buying our products. Like, it's so just, it's
yeah,
insane.
Exactly. Yeah, it's almost like there's some wisdom in this. But this feels like I'm watching a relic. Like it's
well, you know what? I got that same feeling when I was a kid, you know, growing up in the 80s and you know, I can't help but feel like the movie isn't perfect, but Back to the Future to me was like it's a, you know, a perfect embodiment. Like from 1955 to 1985. Now they actually conjured in the next movie what the year 2015 would look like, and we kind of laughed because we all went through that, and there's still no flying cars 9 years after that. But the changes in society between 1955 and 1985 were huge. Like the streets were nicer. People, I mean, they, not that everyone was a saint, because you know some people were kind of bad then still, but overall there was a cultural Christianity was still kind of holding on. And you look, I remember watching that movie as a kid, and like, I would like to be back in that time rather than 1985 when, you know, the subways are all spray painted and crime's everywhere and, you know, and everything is so nasty and profane. It's like, to me, I just felt like that movie made me a conservative.
Well, I've heard you now say a few times, and I think this is actually more common than I even prefer. It was like, well, there were bad people at the time. Well, there were bad things going on at the time. It was like, well, yeah, of course. Like, there's bad things going on at all times. Like, it just annoys me that we even have to say it. To your point, it almost feels like I've been taking the copium of like, that doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel like it ever existed. Like the world that I grew up in is nothing like that.
Okay. This is a funny moment though. So Congressman Bob Dornan, B1 Bomber Bob, he was awesome. He was a very conservative member of Congress in the 1990s. And he represented Orange County, California, and he used to joke that he joined the radical John Birch Society to appeal to the moderates in his district because everyone was so conservative. Then things have changed, obviously, in the 20 years since. That district is now run by a pro-abortion Catholic. Or I don't know if Loretta Sanchez is still there, but anyway, B1 Bombers, kind of firebomb guy, Bob Dornan. I like him a lot, but somebody, oh, he's too conservative. But I remember a speech he gave to a pro-life group at the University of Notre Dame. I was there for the conference. And it was right after, it was like 5 months after the attack on 9/11. And he said, now, have you noticed what's been going on lately, the last few months in our country? You know, people are just nicer to each other. They're opening doors for ladies. They're just, you know, and generally kind. People feel patriotic. They talk about how they love their country. And people said to me, gosh, this is so weird. This is just, I mean, I like it, but it's kind of a weird thing. And he goes, that's not weird. This is what normal looks like. This is where our country was. And then for the last 30 years, you know, the left has tried to convince us to hate our country, not to be, you know, open doors for people. You know, like anytime a man would say, can I help you with that luggage in the airplane? He'd get, you know, some feminist would shoot him a look and spit him nails at him. And we, you know, we had a normal society there. And for the last 30 years, it went crazy. He goes, this isn't the crazy time. This is how it's like more a normal society is. And of course, unfortunately, that didn't last. And we drifted back into like this kind of cultural Marxism. And we live in this, you know, it's just raining everywhere. And then people just assume, oh, we should, you know, we should swim. It's like, no, this is not normal. The you know, the sex is going like this at each other all the time. Right. Feminism, you know, DEI, all this other garbage, woke stuff. It's unnatural. It's horrible. And it's pitting each other against each other. And it'd be nice to go back to a sense of normalcy. That's, I think, exactly what Donald Trump gets at when he says, make America great again. It's not like we're trying to rewind everything back to 1951 here. That's not what we're saying. But it used to be that we weren't at each other's throats. And I make the point, like, the left likes to talk the unity game. But everything they promote causes division. They want they want envy in economics. They want to, you know, try to, you know, push. Oh, millionaires and billionaires don't pay their fair share, and everything is, you know, anti-white. They want to force this DEI woke stuff down our throats. Yeah. It's the left that's trying to divide us.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to curb you there before we go too far down that road. So I got to finish up my Twilight Zone here. I got to round out the show here. I don't know if we came up with a tiebreaker yet. If so, Slack me, one of the producers. But so my Twilight Zone this week, the new Lego movie looks terrible. No, I'm not talking about a new Lego movie. I'm talking about a new law in California to protect the identification of criminals. So when the police post pictures of criminals. It's kind of, I don't even know if it's law or just courtesy to blur out the faces of people under 18. But if you're not under 18, typically, you know, pictures go up of people that are committing crimes so that people can be aware of, you know, what's going on in their community.
Well, to be technical, not technical, but to be more accurate, they're arrested for crimes. They still haven't been tried yet, obviously. So
right, arrested for crimes. And so the Murrieta Police Department in California has been posting arrest and lineup photos with suspects' pictures replaced with Lego heads to comply with new state law protecting offenders' rights. And
These are people over 18, so it's all of them, right? Yeah.
This is worth coming over to the live stream to see. I mean, the funniest. It's so funny. You either laugh or you cry, I guess. I mean, we're talking about like people. They replace someone's head with a Shrek head because he's wearing a Shrek shirt. He's like sitting handcuffed on the side of the road. We have various racial Lego heads. Sometimes we have white ones, we have yellow ones, we have brown ones. Some of them look angry, some of them have beards. Truly just shocking that this...
You got to mock a stupid law, and they're doing a good job of this right now.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. But the story does have an ending. Lego has instructed the California Police Department to stop using Lego heads to mask identities of subjects. So kind of lame, if you ask me. The Lego heads, I thought, were pretty hilarious. But Lego has now not decided they're not a huge fan of this. So
yeah, get arrested in California. Criminals, I guess.
I wonder if you get to choose your Lego head. I remember used to like popping on different Lego heads to different characters. Like sometimes I do like the Darth Vader head. That'd be a cool one. I don't know if you get to choose. Maybe that'll be a new part of the law. So that was my Twilight Zone. Definitely worth checking out. Oh, Ben's going to pull up a coin flip for the tiebreaker. Because we're competitive brunch, I don't believe in ties, and Josh doesn't like soccer. So looks like Ben has a coin flip for us. This will determine the winner of this week's trivia. Wow. This is high stakes. This is March Madness. Go ahead, flip it, Ben. Wait. All Josh's tails. Heads. Wait, Josh, you're choosing tails?
Yeah, why not?
All right, Josh's choosing tails. Loop cast his heads. Flip it. Wow.
By the way, statistically speaking, if you have a quarter, you have a better than 50% chance if you pick tails.
Gosh dang it. So Josh won. Tails never fails. I'm sorry, Lucas. Someone did try to claim tails. I'm sorry it came in a little bit too late after the buzzer. Sorry, Brad. So right now I'm keeping track, and this will be a weekly thing. We have Josh 1. Dang it. Lucas 0. But we'll have another quiz on Friday if you want to join us for the next show. We appreciate you guys so much. Really just trying to find new ways.
Are we going to do this show on Good Friday?
So we are not going to do the show on Good Friday. So Good Friday is for prayer and penance, yeah, repentance.
That's a good idea.
Wishing you guys a fantastic Holy Week, one filled with prayer and time with your families. Obviously the focus that week is on our Lord, Loopcast included. So we will not have a show on that Friday. But we will be with you in celebrating that, and hope you guys all have a wonderful Easter with your families. I guess that Monday, I don't know if we work. I'll keep you guys posted on when the shows are going to be, but we will not have one on Good Friday. But we appreciate you all so much. If you want to help us out, subscribe to the YouTube. Go check it out. We're going to try out fun new things like trivia. If you want to leave us a review, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, 5 stars if you please. You can email me, lukecast@catholicvote.org. If you have mailbag, or you have some questions, or you just want to talk, you can find us there. And I hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. I hope you guys enjoy some basketball. We are going to end with St. Thomas More, St. Fidelis, Our Lady of Guadalupe. Pray for us. And hope you guys have a great week. See you guys on Monday. Peace.